There are other permutations, for example, in older streams of Christianity, such as the Roman Catholic expression, a person might be baptized and therefore ultimately saved, but first have to spend some short duration, some amount of time in purgation, which is an intermediate state of hell, before being allowed to pass on to the reward of paradise. Generally speaking, though, although many Christians also anticipate a resurrection of the dead, Christian theology sees heaven and hell in terms of what we could call final destinies. That is to say, after death, you end up in one of two places: hell forever, or heaven forever. And the way that the resurrection of the dead then fits into this, if you're in heaven or hell forever, the way that the resurrection of the dead fits into this is rather fuzzy. You die, you go to heaven, or you go to hell, end of story. Oh yeah, and there's a resurrection somewhere. Has something to do with something. Maybe you get resurrected and go right back to heaven. You come back for a few minutes, or for a few seconds, to get your body, and then you go back to heaven. I don't know. Anyway, Christianity agrees that the solution to the hell problem, you know, this hell problem, it's killing us. We got to do something about it. The solution to the hell problem has something to do with the suffering and death of our master, Yeshua of Nazareth. Yes. There's the solution, but the relationship's not exactly clear. And we're not going to talk about soteriology today. We're not going to talk about the mechanism of salvation. That's another topic. And in fact, you can consult What About Evangelism. We dealt with these things in What About Evangelism a couple years ago. But for the most part, in Christian theology, it's not completely clear. And it's in anyone's theology, these are divine mysteries, you know. This is not completely clear. But how does one man's six-hour suffering ordeal compensate for a presumed debt of eternal suffering, which every human soul seems to owe to God by default, universally? Have you ever thought about that? How does that math work? Anyway, so I'm just throwing out some of the fuzziness, some of the problems here that we seem to just inherit and assume. Then there's the question of children. What happens to the soul of a child who dies? God forbid. Suppose a baby, God forbid, were to die. I don't know why I bring this up, except that it seems like we're pretty much okay with adults spending eternity in hell, but we don't like the idea of sending children to hell. Some forms of Christianity baptize infants as quickly as possible to guarantee heaven to the child's soul, right? Others, similar to my own background, insist that the rules are different for children. God does not send the soul of a child to hell until the child has passed a certain age of accountability. This age is usually not defined, you know, and when your kids are starting to get to that age, I think as a parent, you know, hits at about two. Right? But I mean, if you think about this, it's like, okay, at a certain age, my child is going to come to an age of accountability where, after which, if he doesn't make the right decision, he's going to spend an eternity in torment. This is crazy when you think about it. I mean, every moral, ethical, loving parent should be obligated by the simple ethics of the situation then to kill their children before they reach the age of accountability, whatever it is, lest they should make the wrong decision and end up, you know, in torment forever. I don't know. Yeah. I'm just throwing these ideas out. These are just things. You know, I know a lot of people don't think about things like I do, and I sometimes it's maybe better if I just don't talk so much. My wife once told me, you know, you don't need to say everything you think. And that was, I thought, that's brilliant. Anyway, the closer one looks into heaven and hell within Christian theology, the less certainty that one can discern. In fact, there's very little that can be said about either heaven or hell because, for the most part, the scriptures are silent on both matters, making only what I would describe as veiled references to both. And very few people ever report back, you know, from either to tell us what it's like. And those who do, we are not apt to believe. So the Bible doesn't, you know, it doesn't lay down any strict equations for figuring out who's going where either. We make the equations by, you know, putting this verse and connecting this idea and that sort of thing. We're the ones who make the equations about how to get into one, or, you know, and this sort of thing, and who's going where. We're making these sorts of decisions. But the Bible doesn't seem to lay down these equations for figuring out who's going where, or for how long, or what the terms are. And so this leaves Christians to rely on the strength of their own traditions about heaven and hell, but the traditions, unfortunately, often conflict with other Christian traditions and even often with the scriptures themselves. And so it becomes very confusing, and the tendency then is to just not talk about it so much, kind of have it off there in the background, but not talk about it so much. Especially when you try to factor in the resurrection. For example, if a sinner dies and goes to hell to burn in torment forever and ever, then why does God resurrect him from the dead, judge him, and then throw him back into torment? And if he's already been in hell for, say, 6,000 years, shouldn't he get something for time already served before that final judgment? These are just questions. And if I'm in heaven and if I'm in perfect bliss, because, I mean, what do you think heaven is? It's perfect bliss, you know. So then why does God resurrect me at a later time, at the time of the second coming? Or am I in the resurrected body when I get to heaven? Some people say I am. And if so, how does that work while my body, you know, while my earthly body is still dead and buried in the ground? Where did I get this resurrected body? That's not a resurrection. That's a reincarnation. If it's a different body, I mean, that's the difference. You have resurrection, you have reincarnation. Resurrection is the same body coming back to life. Reincarnation is a soul being put into a different carnation, you know, which is flesh. That's, you know, a different body. So when Christian theologies take the resurrection factor more seriously, then it's like the train goes down a different track. I don't know if you're familiar with any of these sorts of theologies, but you have whole sectors of Christendom that reject both heaven and hell, and even imply the existence of the undying conscious soul after death, that it doesn't exist. You don't have a soul. There is no such thing as the soul. They teach that the dead are simply dead. Yes? It's called soul sleep. You've heard of soul sleep? The dead are dead until the resurrection, at which point they are judged for destiny in either heaven or hell. And this, you know, this can be supported textually from the Bible by stringing together a few passages and ignoring others. And it seems that to be absent then from the body is not to be with the Lord, and that there is no human sentient consciousness that exists apart from the body in this theory. In other words, when you're dead, you're not in heaven. You're dead until the resurrection. It's called soul sleep. And there's a, you know, frankly, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of Sabbatarians that embrace that view of the afterlife.